Welcome to the HCI family of podcasts. We're your source for personal, professional, and organizational growth and development. We share our own original research, explore industry trends, and interview executives and thought leaders from across the globe. Join us for practitioner-oriented content around all things leadership, HR, talent management, organizational development, and change management. Maximize your personal and organizational potential with the HCI family of podcasts. Dr. Roger Feierstein, welcome to the conversation today.
Thank you. Delighted to be here.
It is a pleasure to be with you. You're joining us from New York. I'm south of Salt Lake City in Utah. And today we're going to be talking about really your latest book, but specifically around deliberate creativity and creative problem solving is the general topic. And we're going to talk about how we can lead to create teams that are more creative and create and develop that problem solving mentality and approach within our teams. As we get started, I wanted to share Roger's bio with everybody. Roger Feierstein has presented programs on innovation to over 600 organizations around the world, including Fortune 500 corporations, government agencies, universities, associations, and religious institutions. His 9-part series on innovation is available on the Open Sesame e-learning platform, and his latest book includes Solve the Real Problem, Why Didn't I Think of That, and Create in a Flash. He is an associate professor emeritus at the Center for Applied Imagination at Buffalo State University, president of Innovation Resources, Inc., and a founding member of the Buffalo Society for Creativity in the Medical Education area, and guest lecturer at the Jacobs School of Medicine and Biomedical Sciences at the University of Buffalo. Tremendous background. I could go on and on, but I'm going to pause there, Roger. Anything else you would like to highlight by way of your background or personal context before we dive on in?
That's just fine. That's fine. It's so delighted to have a lot of fun doing all of that stuff. Perfect, John. Perfect.
Okay. Well, very good. Yeah. Why don't we start off, if you could just kind of frame up for us, whenever I'm talking to an author who's written books or a book, you know, that's a labor of love. It's a hard thing to do.
Yes,
why this book? Why now? What if you were to distill like the main core of like why this is so important, what would that be?
John, I really appreciate you asking that question. My sixth book, Create in a Flash, A Leader's Recipe for Breakthrough Innovation, came out in 2019. And it began to catch on. And One day I got a call from an individual that said, I'd like to meet with you. And I had a meeting with this gentleman, and his name is Dr. Ken Snyder. He's a brain surgeon and an engineer at the Jacobs School of Medicine here in Buffalo. He came in with a book, and authors love this. The book was dog-eared, and there was markings and all this kind of stuff. And we had an hour-long conversation, and John, I had to drive around for an hour afterwards to decompress. He goes, I love the work that you're doing. He said, I'd like you to work with our medical students in doing some creative problems. I've been thinking a little bit differently. And I'd like you to kind of focus in the area of finding what the real problem is, because oftentimes we don't know what the problem is. We misdiagnose. And so can you give our medical students some tools for that? So I started to work with his neurosurgery residents. I started to work with first year students, really focusing on the area of finding out what the real problem is. Because the first part of creative problem solving is let's find what the real problem is, because it doesn't make any sense to generate lots of ideas for solving the wrong problem. So let's search for the real problems. Okay, so I began to do this work with him. And then I got a call from a friend who works for a strategic command out of Omaha, Nebraska, at Offutt Air Force Base, out your way. And she said, I'd like you to come out. I'd like you to work with my people because they don't know how to define problems. I said, wait just a second. You folks are in charge of cybersecurity and nuclear security for all of North America. Why are you having me come in to help you folks figure out what problems are? And they said, we're in a command and control environment. So oftentimes what the admiral, what the general thinks is the problem is the problem. And it goes all the way down the ranks. And we don't spend the time figuring out what the real problem is. So this is September of 2021. And John, when a book begins, it begins with sort of a thread, and there's a feeling around it. And then it sort of nags at you. Because when I did Create in a Flash, my sixth book, I thought I was done. You know, we put everything in that, a whole lot of love, a lot of effort into it. It worked very well. So I thought I was done. And this is sort of nagging at me. And so I began to work on solve the real problem. And so, and in the book, what we do is we interview people from business, manufacturing, medicine, education, agriculture. And I ask them one question. Give me an example of a problem that you were working on that you found out was not the problem at all. And the folks were wonderful in helping me out working on that. And they gave wonderful responses. And that really forms the basis of the new book, Solve the Real Problem. So it began with a thread. And then it is truly an act of love. And I had wonderful people to work with on this. I have a marvelous editor, Heather Lazikas, an incredible art director, because half of the book is pictures, because we learn visually. We learn not only in text, but we learn in pictures. And books, I believe, should be a work of art. And so I hope this is a work of art.
Well, thank you so much for that background. Yeah, it takes a lot to write a great book. And the marketplace is flooded with so many books, a lot of which are just so-so, and there's a lot of white noise out there. And so really putting your passion in expertise into something like this, I think is powerful, so that it can be shared and spread and disseminated widely, which is wonderful.
Absolutely.
With that as a backdrop, let's dive on in. And I want to start with a question generally about leadership, because as I frame this up at the beginning, you know, we individually want to be creative. I want to be a good problem solver, but I can only do so much by myself. So anytime I'm trying to tackle the biggest challenges, problems that are out there and have the most creative responses, I'm going to have to do it with people. You're going to have to collaborate. You're going to have to get buy-in from people, and that requires leadership. And so let's start with this leadership question. Sometimes people think leaders are kind of born that way. You need this kind of classical charismatic type of a leader, versus, you know, there are lots of training programs out there to develop leadership competencies and capabilities. What's your take on that age-old question around whether leaders are born or made, and how does that apply to this creativity realm?
Well, let's take it a step further from that. Between leaders are born or made, but also the question comes, is creativity innate in people? And are we born creative or are we not born creative? So let me take that angle if we could. And so where we come from is that we're all creative and we create in different and valuable ways. Being creative is what makes us human. And some of us prefer to come up with ideas that are totally outside the box. Others of us prefer to create ideas that create more incremental improvement. The myth around creativity, and also the myth around leadership as well, let me go about the myth around creativity, is if you ask someone if they're creative, 9 times out of 10, they say they're not. If you ask first graders if they're creative, all the hands up. If you ask third graders, are you creative? All their hands go up. By the time we get to about the fifth grade, people say, well, I'm not creative, because what they mistake creativity from is the arts. So when people say, well, what do you do? I said, well, I'm a creativity consultant. I get answers like, oh, is that basket weaving or are you an artist? But when I change the conversation just a little bit and I say, well, I'm an innovation consultant, people say, oh, we love innovation. We love innovation. Okay. So people are not so sure about this creativity thing, but they are more sure about this innovation thing. So we're all creative and we create in different and valuable ways. So maybe you haven't invented a personal computer, or maybe you haven't done a great work of art. But have you found a way to make the leftovers in your refrigerator better? Have you found a way to help the people in your neighborhood feel better? Have you found a new way to put your kids to sleep at night? You know, have you found a new way to tell someone that you love them? That's creativity, and that's where we come from.
I'm one. You know, I remember years ago sitting in some sort of a training. I don't even remember exactly what it was, but but I remember kind of the aha moment, because I don't think of myself as a creative person. You know, I, like you said, that's reserved for people who are like writing songs or painting pictures or whatever. Right. Yeah. And whatever the specific context was of this kind of training, the speaker was talking and essentially shared what you just shared. And I had that aha moment where I'm like, oh, maybe I need to take a broader look at this. And then all of a sudden I started to do some self-reflection and to analyze. I'm like, oh, well, wait a minute. I write a lot. That's certainly creativity. While I'm not like super athletic, I love sports. While I'm not like the best musician in the world, I love music. I love to sing. I love to, you know, dabble on the guitar, stuff like that. I'm not the best ever. I'm not going to win awards for it, but it's something I enjoy, and it's an emotional outlet, right? And as I started to unpack that, I started to recognize, oh, there's actually, I have a lot of creativity in me. And then I started to see that others around me had a lot of creativity in them. And it's not just the what we tend to tag as the creative types. We say, oh, this person's creative. Yeah. Exactly. This person's an artist. I'm like, no, like everyone has that capacity. Yes. You think about when we're children, everyone is creative. They have imaginary friends, they're making up games, they're whatever. Like it's just part of being human. And it in some ways kind of gets beaten out of us. You know, we get socialized away from this creativity as we kind of conform with societal norms and organizational norms, et cetera. And so as a leader, one of the great things we can do is remind our people of their capacities and their creativity and what they have inside of them and help to draw that out from them, help them feel safe to share. And it is intimate. It is, you have to be vulnerable to share the innermost kind of creative juices that are within you. And so if you have a toxic workplace environment, guess what? You're probably not going to get much creativity out of anybody. On the other hand, if you start to create a psychologically safe environment where people trust each other, where they care about each other, then people will be more vulnerable. They'll start to share. They'll be more open, communicate more freely. And all of those are the types of dynamics that help to lead to a stronger creativity and problem-solving culture within your team, within your organization.
Well, let's jump off from that. Okay. That's fantastic. When we talk about leadership, we talk about organizations. You mentioned the toxic leader and the leader that actually fosters creativity in an organization. The organizations that are most creative are an organization that's built on trust, that's built on openness, that has a mistake-friendly attitude, that has the skills that people can use to create with, and then has a place where they can apply those skills. So you can train people in creative problem solving, great. But they need to apply those skills to something that's relevant. And that's why the book is focused on solving the real problem. Because when you solve relevant problems creatively, that builds and that builds and that builds and that builds and that builds. And so that makes an environment extremely creative and it builds on itself. A couple of other things you talked about, you know, how playing guitar and all those things are creative acts. Yes. The eminent psychologist Abraham Maslow said, a first-rate soup is better than a fourth-rate painting. A first-rate soup is better than a fourth-rate painting. So it doesn't matter what medium you create in. The focus is, are you putting everything into it? Is it working? Is it valuable for you? And you talked about as being a child when, you know, we were coming up with these ideas and stuff. So we like to use the word like creative people are child, or good creative leaders can be childlike, but not childish. And so if you can appreciate the ideas in sort of a childlike, open way, it's not a childish way, but a childlike way, you begin to foster that environment for creativity and people begin to build on their ideas. And you move away from being sort of this leader that's micromanaging everything, but putting it on the responsibility of the people that work for you. Then you become more of a mentor, you know, a question asker. Because if you've done a good job, you've given people the skills that they can apply them to something that's relevant to them. And that's one of the reasons why we didn't solve the real problem.
Yeah. And to just double click on that for a moment, the questions, asking questions, curiosity is at the heart of so much of what creativity is and creative problem solving. And again, if you go back to children, what do they do constantly, incessantly? They're asking questions. They're curious. They want to understand. They want to know. And sometimes it drives a parent crazy because your kid's asking you literally 1,000 questions a day. But we need to foster that creativity. We need to foster question asking. And people, especially in more toxic organizations, but even just kind of more average organizations, a lot of times people don't feel very safe to ask questions because people, you know, some leaders are insecure. And if you ask a question, they feel like you're attacking them or that you're somehow trying to undermine them or something. We need to create environments where curiosity is king, where people can ask questions, where we can ask the why, like six levels deep. Why? Just like a kid does. Why? They give you an answer. Well, why that? They give you an answer. Well, why? Just keep on asking why. And then and eventually you get to the point where either you have a good reason and a good answer, or you start to realize, oh, maybe we don't actually have to do it that way. Maybe we've only done it this way always because that's just how it's been and that's what people are used to.
Yeah.
Asking questions is so powerful And again, that's one of those things, you know, as we have kind of socialization towards conformity, that tends to kind of get beaten out of a lot of people. And they're at least more hesitant to ask those types of questions. So let's create a curiosity culture.
Yes. So just on that, as I was doing work on Solve the Real Problem, I was doing some research on that. And I came across this wonderful book by a fellow named Dr. Stuart Firestein, not related. And the book is called Ignorance, How It Drives Science. And I love this quote. He said, questions are more relevant than answers. Questions are bigger than answers. One good question can give rise to several layers of answers, can inspire decade-long searches for solutions, can generate whole new fields of inquiry, and can prompt changes in entrenched thinking. And I love this line. Answers, on the other hand, often end the process. Answers, on the other hand, often end the process. And when we talk about asking questions, we ask creative questions. We can talk about those in just a little bit. But one of the things that happens is the problem that we see is the problem that we solve. So back to your point earlier, the key is to see more problems to solve. Now, let's be clear here about what a problem is. A problem is not necessarily a bad thing. A problem is a gap from where we are to where you want to be. And J.P. Guilford, the eminent psychologist, said that solving problems is what helps us grow intellectually. So we solve problems and we grow. I mean, as you're growing, you solve problems and you grow. It's not a bad thing. Just a gap from where we are to where we want to be. So, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Very good. All right. So tell us a little bit more about your problem, your approach to problem solving, creative problem solving, and the kind of the framework and how it works.
Be delighted to. So the work that I do is based on about 70 years of research and practice. It originated by the work with Alex Osborne, who is the O in the advertisers agency BBDO in Buffalo, New York, which is why I live here now. He invented the brainstorming technique, which is generating lots and lots of ideas, and there's specific guidelines around brainstorming. Let's be very clear here. I'm going to talk with you about a process, but the process has boundaries to it. It has guidelines. It's not just willy-nilly.
Yeah.
And one of the things that oftentimes happens is a brainstorm gets a bad name because people haven't been trained in it. They don't execute it properly. There are specific guidelines to follow when you're brainstorming. But brainstorming is a technique for coming up with ideas. And a technique Osborne found wasn't enough. So we built it into a process. And it's called creative problem solving. And we've evolved that process over the years. So basically, there's four steps. First, clarify the problem, generate ideas, develop solutions, and then plan for action. Clarifying the problem is what happens. And what drives this process is you diverge out, come up with lots and lots of ideas or concepts. Then you come in and pick the best ones. You got to look at everything out there, pick the best stuff, choose that. So first thing you do, identify a goal you want to work on. What do you want to do in any aspect of your life? Beautiful thing about creative problem solving is it can be applied to anything where you need lots of ideas, where you're not quite sure what the problem is. And you state it like a goal. It would be great if. You then generate lots of creative questions. And creative questions begin with the words how to, or how might, or in what ways might, or what might be all the. And those questions open your brain up to begin to look for ideas for solving the problem. They don't shut you down. They're what might be all that. So first thing we do is we generate a whole bunch of creative questions. People are oftentimes very uncomfortable with this because they've been taught that the problem that you see is the problem that you solve. You have one problem and you solve it. No. We come up with a bunch of creative questions and we choose the best creative question to work on. Once we've done that, we generate lots of ideas for that. We select the best ideas in idea generation. We refine those ideas, and then we develop an action plan. It's a natural process. It's not willy-nilly. It follows a procedure. And the thing about that, within that, though, there is so much room for flexibility. All we're going to do right now is generate creative questions. Then we'll pick the best ones. All we're going to do right now is generate ideas. Then we'll pick the best ones. And so that's the nature of the process. So clarify. Clarify the problem, generate ideas, develop solutions, put together an action plan.
Yeah, excellent. And, you know, we've all been there where we've been in meetings where they say, okay, let's brainstorm.
Oh, God.
And at least for me, like 99% of the time that someone says, let's brainstorm, it's not actually like the methodology of brainstorming.
No.
Which then gives it a bad name, right?
Right. And there's a lot of articles out there that give it a bad name, but they haven't trained people in it. I mean, just think about this. I mean, you know, and they just read the instructions. They read the instructions and then try and solve it. Well, Could you learn to ride a bicycle by just reading the instructions? Of course not. You need to be trained on it. And so what we do when we do a brainstorming session or an idea generating session, we warm up. We give people something fun to work on, like, you know, how to improve a bathtub or, you know, or zany stuff like how to get an elephant out of a refrigerator, fun stuff like that. Gets the group warmed up, gets them laughing. Then we work on the challenge at hand. So, yeah.
Yeah. Excellent. Excellent. Okay. So let's talk a little bit more now about how to generate this problem-solving mindset, this creativity-driven problem-solving mindset. You identify four different types of mindsets. Can you go into that for us?
Yes. So in Solve the Real Problem, as I mentioned earlier, I interviewed people from a variety of walks of life, and I asked them one question, okay? Tell me a story about your life or your work when you thought the problem that you were working on was not the problem at all. They gave me all these wonderful answers, and then these answers fell into sort of four mindsets, and they overlap a bit, but here's the predominant theme. The first mindset is challenge your assumptions. I'll go into each one of those. Next one is get an outside perspective. The next one is see the big picture. The next one is look for all of the details. So challenge your assumptions. When you use the word assume, the definition of it is assumed to be the case without relevant knowledge. So when you assume something, you really are making a decision based on little or no evidence. So challenge your assumptions, first thing, okay? Get an outside perspective. This is a really cool one because oftentimes when I go to work in organizations and I work with groups, they'll say, on a technical problem, they'll say, well, we need to have all the technical experts on this. And I'll say, now, wait just a second. If the technical experts haven't solved this, why have more technical experts on this? Because they have the same knowledge that these other folks do. And that's why it's important to bring in people from a different perspective, bring in people that don't know what can't be done. And we do that in one of our products called a Breakthrough Lab, where we actually have people come in that are trained in creative problem solving, can generate ideas on a client's challenge, and then leave, okay? Because they provide that fresh perspective. And in any of our businesses, the best way to get a new idea is to talk to people that aren't in your business. So challenge your assumptions, get an outside perspective, see the big picture. Oftentimes people get so into the details that they don't see the overall picture, what they're trying to solve at all, okay? So zoom out. Hey, what's the problem we really want to solve here? What's the big picture? The opposite of that then is look at all the details. And so the thing behind that is just pause, consider all the information first, and then begin to generate some creative questions around that. We use the word see the big picture and look for all of the details as sort of a visual example because it helps you to kind of see the big picture. Okay, I'm going to look up here, look for all the details. I'm going to look right here. But you need to have both. The key is to not get too mired in the details that you don't see the big picture. But knowing that those assumptions are out there, you can use those assumptions to help you to generate more creative questions, more insights about what the real issue is.
Well, Roger, I note the time. We've only just barely scratched the surface here.
There's so much more.
But I know I need to let you go here soon and get on with your busy day. And thankfully, you have a book. So people can go to it and learn more and get in touch with you and learn more. Before we wrap things up, I wanted to give you a chance to share with the audience how they can connect with you, find out more about your work, your team, where they can find your book, how they can get in touch, and then give us the final word on the topic for today.
Yeah, sir. So the book is called Solve the Real Problem. And it's called Because What You Think Is the Problem is usually not the problem. You can find it on my website. You can get it through Amazon, Solve the Real Problem. It's also to find out more about me, go to my website, rogerfeierstein.com. And so I'll just spell that out for you, Roger, FIRESTIEN.com. On that, we talk about training programs that we do in creativity. We just finished one of those last week. We'll talk about the other books that we have, about the Breakthrough Lab. There's an online course where you can take the course in creative problem solving using Create in a Flash. And then you can use that in your life. So, and then I guess the final word would be three things. So, and this goes for trying to set the environment for creativity in your organization as well. I think one of the best way to create the environment for creativity is to solve relevant problems. And so I'd like you to keep this in mind. First, pause. Don't accept your first definition of the problem as the real problem. Pause. Don't accept your first impression of the problem as a real problem. Okay. Second, ask creative questions, like how to or how might or how might. Then third, choose the creative question that best defines your problem and then generate ideas. So pause, ask creative questions, choose, and then generate.
Love it. Roger, thank you so much. This has been a real pleasure. I encourage the audience to reach out, get connected, find out more about what Roger can do for you. Check out the book. And as always, I hope everyone can stay healthy and safe, that you can find meaning and purpose at work each and every day. And I hope you all have a great week. Thanks for joining us for this episode of the podcast. We hope you stay healthy and safe, and please join us again soon.